And hi, Emmanuel. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's really nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. I had the pleasure of interviewing Emmanuel a number of years ago now. But just as a brief introduction, Emmanuel is associated with the Global Oneness Project, something that began back in 2004, 2005, if I recall correctly, and has done many, many films around the world on the general theme of oneness. And Emmanuel, I remember when we first talked, you were sort of at the launching stage of this most recent project, and it was, I think, a kind of a new venture in terms of its length and breadth. And looking back on it now, I can see that it was quite an ambitious project, and took maybe more time than you thought. And I'm just interested in, maybe as a starter, describe that process, what it looked like when you began, and what it looks like now, what it became, what the experience was like.
Sure, that's a great question, and a great question to start with. As Paul mentioned, back in 2004, 2005, I started the Global Oneness Project, and at the time, it was when I came up with the idea, it was to use the emerging medium of video on the web to share stories from people around the world that weren't being shared in the mainstream media. Stories that explored the idea of interconnectedness in many spheres, not just the spiritual sphere, but how those ideas and values translated into many of the areas that that were of interest to me to explore, whether they were politics or economics or service or community issues or ecology. And we spent several years traveling around the world gathering those stories and sharing them using the web, and then other means as well, more traditional means, more community-based means through screenings and lots of different things. And during those few years, how people consume media on the web changed, and it was no longer just a place where you could share 3 or 4 or 5 minute long stories and clips. As we all know, iTunes and Netflix and all the things that we take for granted now transformed how we consume media and allowed more conventional length films and stories to be part of the web, which encouraged us to then to begin to create and explore longer format films. And we did several of those before we decided to actually commit ourselves to making a feature-length film, which we did started the project back in the beginning of 2009. And I met, I guess, you then, Paul, for that interview with CS Monitor, around then. Is that right?
Yes, exactly.
And when we started the film, of course, you start a film with one idea, and where you end up is usually, 360 degrees in every different direction from where you started. Definitely an interesting experience on many levels. And when we started the film, the premise was to make a film about water, for many reasons, and one of those being that, through water you explore so many facets of our world, whether they be culture or religion or spirituality or ecology or politics. So many things are rooted through water and in water. And in some ways, water is a very powerful way of looking at what's happening to our world, because so many things come through it. And we also wanted not to make an issue-driven film, meaning a film that was going to convey facts and figures about what's wrong and what could be right and all the complexities of the water issues, but to try and tell a very human story about our relationship to the natural world, our relationship to water through characters who would form the basis of our film. And they were all connected through water in different ways. One in India through his work to try and revitalize the Ganges, a woman in northern Alberta whose community was dying from poisoned water as it impacts of development in the tar sands region, and an inventor who had found certain patterns in water that he was applying to technological solutions and engineering solutions, kind of biomimicry based, looking at how water moves and how it flows. And the idea was that through these different stories that are connected by water, we'd be able to tell a larger story about not only our relationship to the natural world, our relationship to water, but also, you know, these journeys and struggles people go on who are committed to service, who have spent their lives trying to overcome these tremendous problems that have either ended up in their backyard, like our character Ariel, whose community, you know, had no choice but to fight and try to stop what's happening, or Rajendra Singh, who is known as the Water Gandhi in India for his work revitalizing rivers in Rajasthan, but then felt compelled to take what he had learned, that experience, to try and tackle one of India's largest problems, which is the destruction of the Ganges. And then this technological approach. So through these different stories, perhaps something could emerge that would offer both an experience of what's happening and a possible way forward, and rooted through these personal journeys, on what it takes to commit oneself to this work and what one goes through. So it was a very it was a very interesting journey, to definitely. In hindsight, overly ambitious, but you can only say that in hindsight, I think. definitely humbling in many ways. Just seeing a lot of what we saw during the process was very hard. It kind of forced a lot of, raised a lot of questions for me personally that I had to kind of sit with, and then also, seeing the people that, both our subjects, our main subjects, but all the people around them. The struggles they go through, how they overcome, how they persevere. That was probably the biggest lesson, is that the tremendous amount of determination and perseverance people have, and their willingness to commit themselves fully to try and overcome adversity, and the struggles they go through. And something we captured in the film was really the struggles they go through, the very human struggles, the self-doubt, the doubt people put on them, the challenges they go through in their own personal lives, whether it be family problems or money problems or just trying to balance their lives amidst this turmoil, was very interesting. And one thing we did not expect the film to focus on as much in the outset was kind of these very personal dramas, and they became very central to the film because, we couldn't ignore those very human elements when we were trying to tell the story. So, yeah, it's a journey. It's still going on, I would have to say, even now.
It sounds like, and that's probably a testament to the worthiness of it, that it continues. You said just then it raised some questions that you had to sit with, and you've sort of explored that a little bit. Can you go a little further, maybe about yourself, what the project has meant to you in terms of where it hasn't left you yet, but you're in a different space now?
I think that probably anybody who spent a few years of their life on one thing, it goes through many cycles. It's like there are peaks and valleys, and there's moments of optimism and moments of despair and frustration and inspiration. And I found all of those in this project, both in my own personal life and then also in the film. Let's just say, for example, we spent over 6 weeks in India going on a journey from the source of the Ganges to the sea. So from Gangotri and Gomukh, the source of the Ganges and its glacial headwaters, all the way to Gangasagar, where it meets the Bay of Bengal. It's about 1,600 miles. Now, through that experience, we saw, I think experienced so much of what India has to offer, both positive and negative, and not just of India. I think it's a representation of the world. It's just in India, it's all right in front of you, right there. It's so tangible. You can't push it off to the side. I think in the West and in some more developed, in quote, developed countries, it's easier to push those things off to the side.
You can go around it a bit.
You can go around it, but in India you can't, which I think is one of the things that makes it so powerful experience, is everything is there, right in front of you. All the time. So there we experienced, tremendous pollution, all the time along the river, which was very hard to see. And then that just takes a toll on you personally when you just start to see that. I mean, day in and day out, day in and day out, you see, you know, how this ancient, beautiful, powerful river is being destroyed in so many different ways, and that takes its toll on you, and you start to think, like, this is impossible to ever stop. How could this stop? The amount of pollution, the amount of sewage, the amount of overuse, that's happening there. But then you have these moments where you see, 200 university students take a pledge that they are going to become stewards of the river and commit their lives to the service of the river where they live. And they're doing it with such, it's almost like, I would say, not just commitment, but just like a deep integrity, a deep personal conviction that they rise up to offer. And that's very inspiring. That's very, that gives you hope. And so there were so many instances like that on that journey where you would see this, the tremendous challenges, and then immediately afterward, these tremendous opportunities. So I feel like that happened throughout the film, where you would just see these hardships, or you'd be challenged personally by how to deal with the problems you're facing in making a film, and then the opportunities would arise. So a lot of contradictions, a lot of everything. I don't know if I'm articulating that very, very well. It was hard to, because there were so many contradictions and so many different things happening all the time on that journey and throughout the film. That it just made me realize how complicated things are, how un-black and white things are, even more so than I had felt before. Mm. And that it's really hard to say this is one way forward, or this is the, and this is the problem and this is the solution, because it's every different place. There's so many stories that show you how complicated it is, how nuanced things are, how deeper they are. It's, water is at the surface, and you go beneath it, there's so much there. There's history, and you can't just come in and say, well, this is an environmental problem we need to fix. But how do you fix a problem which is rooted in culture for thousands of years? How do you fix a problem which is rooted in religion, which is rooted in so many things that require a much deeper way of looking at things? So that was a big thing. So it just raised so many deep questions inside myself during the course of the process like that.
Yeah, I can imagine. And which raises a question for me, which is sort of about impact. And in terms of your work, Elemental as well as previous work, how do you think about the impact you're hoping to have? Because in this case, I recall from our previous conversation, one of the things that struck me was that you said, your films, your works were not intended to provide a prescription for what people should do. And you've kind of reiterated that. I can imagine it, that was reinforced with the complexity of this subject. So it makes me curious about your sense, and maybe you could talk a bit about the kind of impact you have in mind when you set out on a project like this.
I think that a lot of the work that I've been involved in has not tried to offer prescriptive solutions as a result. As a result of something you can do, a film that, A, you change these light bulbs, or you go out and do X, Y, Z. I've been more interested in kind of trying to create either experiences that reflect this, something deeper about whether that it's a person who's, let's say, the story that actually Nipun connected me with years ago, which was Jayesh Bhai in Ahmedabad, and sharing that story. And to me, yes, there's tremendous things that Jayesh Bhai does that are inspiring that can be, replicated. But what to me was so touching was Jayesh Bhai himself and trying to share that experience of him being in that genuine space of service. And is there 10 things you can do after that film? Probably. But to me, the most inspiring to me, or the most real, would just be to sit in the space of Jayesh Bhai and the energy that he puts forth in that film, and let that be an inspiration in any way that moves you. And I think that through all the films I've done, and Elemental as well, it was, how can we create an experience that yes, it informs, it educates, it's about these important issues of the day, but beneath that, it's about trying to convey something deeper, try to both raise questions about, you know, on a deep, maybe philosophical or spiritual level about why are we here, what are we doing, where are we going, and that convey an experience that is trying to be as authentic as it can. And I feel that if you can create an authentic experience, then the ripple effect can be tremendous because it touches people from wherever they are. And it doesn't impose an agenda or impose something on somebody. It says, here's something, it's an offering, you take it. How it touches you and what you do with it is really up to you. And you're going to do with it, you know, in a thousand more creative ways than anything I could come up with and tell you 10 things you can do to save the world.
I remember you saying to me in that previous conversation that your work was meant to, and I'm paraphrasing here, but basically inspire people to decide what to do. In other words, encourage people to think for themselves what are the right steps to take, which is a kind of a beautiful concept. It's very open. It's very individual. Do you feel you have a way of knowing with a project if that is happening, or is it so incremental that you just kind of do the work and look at it and kind of trust the process that it will do that?
I think definitely trusting the process and hoping that it'll do that. You know, I think it's hard to focus on outcomes when you're in a creative process sometimes. You know, you want it to do this, you want it to do that, but it's almost a different kind of use of your brain. So, you know, I think I prefer the open approach. I like it when people, you know, they take something that you've created and that you've shared, because all you're really doing is sharing stories. You're taking these stories from these different places in the world, these people, and you're taking them and presenting them in a certain way. So you're sharing these stories and offering them, and what people do with them, you know, I think that's what's, to me, is so lovely. I mean, whether they do nothing except just experience it in the moment and it touches them or it raises questions for them, or they are inspired to go out and do something that's physical with their hands or get involved in something or a combination of that or something. That to me is what makes it alive. So I don't know. I don't know if I think much more about it than that at the moment.
Yeah, well, it's kind of, I mean, I would think with a project of this magnitude, I mean, probably a smaller one too, but I mean, this is true of creative projects. They do, if they are really co-created, they take on a life of their own. And in a sense, you're maybe midwifing something, but it isn't, in the end, even solely your project.
Oh, I completely agree.
I mean, your participants, these characters. I mean, you know, talk a little about the role all of these ingredients, many of them unexpected, play in co-creating what ends up to be the, quote, product.
Oh, I mean, I think that film especially is a very co-creative process. And yes, you have a director and there are certain key roles, but I mean, whether it's documentary or fiction, I mean, you have so many people you're working with. In the documentary sense, it's you know, almost more alive because you aren't telling your actors what to do. You're following their lives. You're sharing their real stories. So they are a complete, you know, ingredient in what makes this come alive. And so they're, you know, you're shepherding them. You're working with them. You're trying to make something from what they're offering. So they are a huge part of it. And you have your crew, and you have, you know, their input, and then you have the environments that you're based in when you're shooting. So, I mean, there's so many things that come alive that contribute to this. That's just maybe in the production process, in the post-production process. You have the editorial part where you bring an editor in and their ideas and contribution, or music and sound. I mean, there's so many elements that go into crafting a 90-minute film that to me just are completely co-creative. So many contributions, and that's both an opportunity and a beautiful thing. It's also a challenge, like how to yet still hold a vision of what you want the film to be, how to take all these pieces and components and craft them into something that maybe stays true to your vision and to the experience that you were participating in during the making of the film.
Yeah, there must be a lot of edges there of control and letting go.
On a daily basis.
if not hourly.
By the minute, I think.
So, it's a great insight into the creative process. I'm curious what water is such a fundamental thing, and all the sharings at the beginning of this conversation made clear how deeply it touches everybody, whether they know it or not. I'm wondering at this point in this project, what you might say about what you sort of learned about water that you didn't know going in.
You know, it's a great question. When I started this project, you know, I probably in some ways was really knowledgeable about the stats and figures about water, more so than I am now. I'd read a lot, done a lot of research. I was really interested in so many aspects of the water crisis, if you will, and the history of our relationship to water. And I went in with a lot of that, you know, that information. So I felt like I was familiar with the subject matter I was about to, you know, make a film on. And what was so interesting was that, in some ways, this film led me away from that. It led me back to the people who were part of the film. It led me on a journey that I hadn't expected. It led me to exploring aspects of the human struggle. It led me to explore different aspects of how water relates to different ecological aspects of our world. It, you know, in some ways, the water is a river. It takes you on a journey. And, you know, I started with a lot of preconceived ideas of what things were, based on things I'd read in books or stats I'd got from research papers, from information I'd gathered. And in some ways, I had to let those go and be taken on the journey of where the film was going to go. And, you know, the film does not talk about water statistics. There's a few places in the film where you get a bit of information to provide context. Rajendra talks about how many people are, you know, dependent upon the Ganges, and there's a little bit of information about the amount of water being used to extract oil in the tar sands. But the majority of the film focuses on the characters' journeys and tries to create an experience of what their lives are like in the midst of these different worlds they live in. So, you know, it was for me. It's like the metaphor of the river. I had started on the river with a lot of ideas and a lot of information, and by the end, I think a lot of that had been washed out of me.
Yeah. It's there are so many metaphors with water, right?
Yeah.
I mean, from what I've seen of the film and from what you've said, it sounds like to probably oversimplify, but it starts out as a film about water and ends up a film about people.
Completely. Yeah, and that water is connected to so many things. I mean, if you really want to make a film about water, you're making a film about climate change, you're making a film about energy, you're making a film about, you know, and the people who are part of that world. And for us, you know, we focused on this very personal, character-driven approach, which meant that the issues of water are always there in the background. You know, the images of the Ganges speak 1,000 words.
Yeah.
You know, both the tremendous pollution it's facing, but also the incredible role it plays in people's lives as a sacred representation in their lives, and the integrated role it has in Indian culture. I mean, so if you have an image of someone doing an arti by the river that is polluted at the same time, I mean, that image to me says more than, you know, what we could say in 30 minutes of talking about it. So it was always there in the background, but it was through the people's stories.
And those being so vital, I mean, it sounds like an absolutely monumental task to, and I'm sure it was close to that, to distill down, as it were, this subject to three people. I mean, I know there's more than three people, but three central characters. In fact, I think when we first talked, if I recall right, you were thinking maybe it would be four. But just briefly, that process of deciding who to feature, who are the three people that make up the key points of this triangle.
Sure. No, I think when we met, we were thinking four, and I'm really glad we didn't go with four. out of any.
So three was hard enough.
Three was hard enough. Well, we wanted characters who would offer different experiences of our relationship to water and the natural world. And Rajendra, you know, through his work in India and what he's trying to do, you know, really offered a very a monumental task on a nationwide scale, and a river which is ingrained in India more so than any other river in the world, just because the number of people who depend on it, the cultural significance, the religious significance, the spiritual significance. And then Ariel, you know, her story in northern Alberta, it was on a smaller scale, very human scale, a town of 1,000 people who are dying of rare forms of cancer because of the impact of the tar sands development, in this rural part of northern Alberta, offered a very different look, a very human lens, someone from North America, a woman, an indigenous perspective. She's from the Athabasca Chippewa First Nation, and their relationship to water, providing food and fish and, a way of life. Well, it was very different to Rajendra's. There were a lot of similarities, but offered a very different perspective. And choosing Jay allowed us to explore kind of a very high-level philosophical and scientific look on the role that water plays in our lives, from this perspective of what it gives as far as inspiration about how nature works, how water moves, how the patterns of how water moves and how water flows have been fascinating people from Leonardo da Vinci on, and how to take what it does and learn from it and integrate it into ideas for changing our world. So those three aspects were very different, very disparate, but there was a connection, A, through water, and B, through the kind of the deep personal relationship each character had to nature and to water in their own individual way, that would hopefully form a backbone that the film could then rest upon. And it did work. I think those connective tissue on a very personal level, as well as through the issues, allowed the film to work, even given that these characters never meet and they're in, you know, very different parts of the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think you were guided to the right three people on the planet, which is quite a remarkable accomplishment, that they could, in a sense, carry the weight of this story, which is so big in many ways and so important. Emmanuel, you talked earlier, you mentioned, and I think we can all understand this, as you rub up close to some of these problems, it takes a certain toll on you in doing it. You see the magnitude, and you know it's difficult to remain optimistic perhaps at times, and I'm wondering if you could just say a little bit about what you do for your own spiritual regeneration at times like that. What do you do to keep yourself going in the face of that?
Ooh, good question. it definitely takes a toll, and what also is challenging, as I wonder if other people maybe on the call can speak to this, if they've spent time on the ground in places where there's tremendous ecological hardship or even physical hardship, is that sometimes you get numb to it. See it every day for 5 or 6 days even, and by the seventh day, it's like you've just accepted it, and that's almost the most alarming thing. Uh-huh. On a personal level, I tried to, it was tough, because sometimes you just also had to get the job done of making a movie, and if you got too caught up in what you were seeing and then letting that emotionally take a toll on you, you weren't focused. You couldn't be focused. It was hard sometimes because you just like you're seeing something, you're experiencing something on every level. It's emotional, it's physical. You're smelling it, you're feeling it, you're tasting it almost. You're experiencing the character's reaction to it. You're seeing all these things around you, and at the same time, you also have to focus on doing your job and making a film. So it was often after the fact when you had time, like maybe after the shoot was over, or you had a day or 6 hours in a car downtime, and it would kind of sit with you and become something that you could actually reflect on a little bit. But as far as dealing with it, you know, on a long-term basis, I think Nipun knows this. I've shared with him. You know, I've had a meditation practice for a long time. You know, I started meditating when I was very young, and that provides me something to go back to. Always, you know, whether it's dealing with the stress of just everyday life, or the tremendous kind of toll seeing a lot of this destruction, this ecological destruction, this human toll it's taking, you know, having a place to go back to and just find a place of silence within myself, that has always helped, regardless of what I've been doing, and this project especially. And sometimes I found it actually hard to do that, because I would close my eyes and then I would see a lot of the images, or I would just be taken back to that place, you know, of what I'd experienced a few days before, a few weeks before, a few months before. And so sometimes I had to take enough time just to process it and then get returned to that place of silence. But the daily practice that I've had since I was a young child has always helped.
Well, we're all grateful you were able to persevere through this project, because it's just an enormous accomplishment.
Paul, just before you go to your last question, I just want to turn on the cue.
Okay, good. Well, I won't take much more time, but I did want to ask just sort of lastly, what are you up to now? Is a project like this, I'm sure it's still very much part of you. It's won numerous awards. I'm sure the screenings and so forth continue, but what's next?
Well, we're in the process of just getting this film out there still. It actually opens in New York next month on May 17th. For at least a week run at Cinema Village. If it does well, it'll stay longer. And,
terrific.
It opens in San Francisco on May 24th at the Landmark Opera, and then on May 31st at the Rafael in San Rafael, as well as in Washington, D.C., Minneapolis, Austin, Portland, Seattle, Boulder, Denver, and some other markets too. So there's a lot of kind of work actually going on right now just to get this film out there, in front of people, and then let it do what it's going to do. It also goes on sale on iTunes on May 28th, and there's a lot of more grassroots way people can share the film. We've got a community screening initiative. You go to elementalthefilm.com, then you'll see how you can host a screening for your community. We're also working with this new crowdsourced theatrical distribution platform called TUG, which anybody in the U.S. can become a screening organizer and bring the movie to their local Cineplex. All they need to do is choose a date, and then if they can get a certain number of RSVPs to say that they're going to the event, then the event happens, and this company will ship a cinema print of the film to the theater, so you can see it at your local Lowe's, which is a really cool experiment.
That's
great. In this kind of people being able to take the reins and what kind of films they want to show. So we're hoping that through all these different ways the film's going out there, as well as through educational channels, it'll reach people, and it'll take on another life of its own. So there's right now I'm kind of in I'm in the zone about let's get this movie out there.
Yeah.
Do what we can to support it. So if anybody on the call wants to help, we need all the help that we can on the ground to get the word out about the film, people to share the dates where it's screening with their friends. The more people who come to the cinema, the more cinemas it's booked in. And when you're working with documentary film or independent film, it's really about mobilizing your audiences and utilizing the grassroots to help spread the word, because we don't have advertising budgets and we're not on billboards. And it's really about word of mouth and individual engagement. So if anybody wants to help, you know, all the information is on the website, elementalthefilm.com. You can reach out to me personally at e@globaloneprojectorg, and I can answer questions or direct you to ways you could help get involved. So sorry for the shameless plug, but we need all the help we can get. And I don't know, Paul. I think I'm honestly looking forward to taking a little bit of time off, a few weeks, just to kind of be quiet and get ready for whatever comes next.
Yeah, well, you've earned it, so I hope that happens. Yeah, so, yeah. Nipun, I'll let you, I don't know how this will work, but I think it's time to stand back and let people talk.
Yeah, Yeah, no, that's great, and thank you, Paul. You're awesome. And Emmanuel, we will be sending out links, and as we have already, but even following the call. So absolutely. We will go to the queue. Again, you can email us, question@servicebase.org, or just hit *6 if you're already on the call on the phone.
Thank you, Nipun. Paul and Emmanuel, what a beauty of conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, as you were talking, Emmanuel, I was thinking, when was the first time I got introduced to your beautiful work? And it's so, right then, quite a serendipity that you mentioned the Global Oneness video of Jayesh Bhai. And that was like light bulb went on. That was, I think, as I remember clearly, I think that was the first video, first documentary that I ever watched of your work. And I think it is a few years back, a couple of years back that I watched it. But the whole the video is just running so vividly in my memory. It's just the whole scene sort of appeared, and I vividly recall that the walk Jayesh Bhai goes through the slum, and how all these playful children, you know, flash mob him, and with so much a smile, and he looks at all of them into their eyes, and he points out one this little girl, and he says, "You know what? Her name is Clean." Then he looks at everyone's fingernails and make sure they all clean. And then he walks into this this small little place, one of the elderly women's home, and she welcomes him with such a beautiful smile and that sort of like, you know, deep gratitude in her eyes. It is very clear memory. Thank you so much. That is one thing I wanted to share. And the second thing is, not so much of a question, more of a, you really, really deeply inspired me to sort of something that I was really nurturing as a seed for a long time, taking baby steps, is around water, work around the water, particularly around how we can harvest the rainwater in whatever way we can. One concrete thing that we have been putting as a project is work in community gardens, how we can harvest rainwater and put it to use in the, you know, really in the middle of in the peak summer months. For example, in the community where we live, there is a tiny place, but still we use something like, in the peak of the summer, we use something like 3.2 million gallons of water, and looking at the energy footprint and the resource impact, if we can do a small thing to help save some water by harvesting the rainwater to feed these plants, that would be a beautiful thing. I was thinking, so I'm taking a vow to really step up that project and really mobilize the community to bring that to fruition. I know when time is ripe, it will happen. And other piece is I'm also going to do a shameless plug for a public service announcement to invite all our friends, local friends here, to a beautiful Book to Action even today at Hayward Public Library, open to all, where we'll be hosting a author about a book around water and seed, particularly the heirloom seed. The title of the book is called The Seed Underground. So all are invited. It is at 2 p.m. at Hayward Public Library. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And so, Emmanuel, have you become like an expert in water issues more so now? I mean, I'm sure at the film and at the film screenings, a lot of people will have questions of, okay, oh, how do we solve this? What do we do locally? Do you find yourself equipped to respond to those questions, or do you find yourself deflecting them to other resources?
I mean, actually, at film screenings, most of the questions are about the people in the film. They're really not about the issues.
Oh, really?
It's really always about, you know,
the stories.
The stories, the people. You know, sometimes people ask, what can I do, you know, but the, you know, not as often as I would have thought. And, you know, I don't say I'm an expert. I definitely have become pretty well-versed in a lot of the water issues. I'm familiar with rainwater harvesting techniques in, you know, in India and in urban communities and what people can do just because of reading and learning about it over the years. But, for instance, on the elementalthefilm.com website, which has a Get Involved section, it links to a few places like international rivers and a few things. But we haven't had a direct kind of outcry of like, what can we do in our own backyard to harvest water? Because the film really isn't about that. You know, it's in some ways more about the hero's journey the characters went on, and then in the backdrop are these larger questions about water. So when they do have questions, if I can answer them, then I will. But if not, there's so many incredible resources out there that can help people answer their questions, or say, like, you know, if they want to build a backyard rainwater harvesting system for they don't have any money, how can they do it? Because so many, for instance, cities will bring rain barrels to you for free. There's so many incredible resources that you can, for instance, learn how to sink the rainwater in your backyard and never have to have irrigation again. Just from a day's work, you can basically cut your irrigation bill off the map. So there's so many ways to do that, and the resources to provide that online. And if I can help, I will. Otherwise,
yeah.
Point them to the web.
But that, I find that to be interesting. I mean, we've got a queue of questions, but I'm just going to throw mine in. Because I want to bring this element into it. I find it interesting that you look at an issue like water and you end up with stories about the human struggle and about just a broader sort of spiritual struggle, if you want to call it that. As you mentioned, you've been meditating since you were a kid, and not just meditating. I mean, I look at my younger cousins and I find it amazing how difficult it is for them to sit just for a little bit, and there you were, you know, when you're 6 years old, like sitting 3-4 hours a day, you could at least. And that's, I find it to be fascinating. And what I'm curious about is how that spiritual background and, you know, your personal practice, how that affects you as a filmmaker, because the nature of Global Oneness Project and all its videos and the film, I haven't seen the film, but I'm sure this is true of the film as well, there's a different flavor to it. And I wonder if how much of that has been conscious, or if you've reflected on some of the design principles that have been affected by your spiritual background, by your meditation practice, and just the kinds of people that you're around.
I'll write a book on that, and 4 years later I'll be able to maybe do it. Well, it's a great, very profound question. I was a much better meditator when I was six, and I think and I could actually sit cross-legged without my knees hurting. Yeah, I mean, I was raised with a very strong meditation practice. Started meditating when I was six for a few hours a day, and when I was 10 or 11, my father made me meditate with him for an hour in the morning, 6 a.m. to 7, and then from 5 to 6 every evening. So it was, you know, and that was when he kind of forced me to do it, because by that, when I was that old, I just wanted to go and play with my friends, and I wanted to sleep in before school, and he said, no, you're going to continue your practice. Taskmaster that he was and is. But my meditation practice definitely has a strong influence on the work that I've done. I think that I just try and bring a certain feeling quality that I find through that practice into the work that I do, whether it be a feeling of stillness or a feeling of love or a feeling of trying to create a broader space. I think that when I'm in my meditation practice, you know, when I'm meditating and I'm doing my practice, I enter a space of feeling expansive, and I try to bring that expansiveness into the work that I do. And that may take many forms. You know, I don't think it's a direct experience of it per se, but by trying to get into that space myself when I'm in connection with the subjects, and then that maybe helps them have a space of expansiveness, or I don't know. But I don't know if I necessarily think about it and have a design structure, but it's there. It's there. It's a hard question to answer. So I don't know if that really...
Yeah, no. And then I'll tell you one place where it did really show up was in the video with Jayeshvai, which was one of the most, it's the most beautiful video in many ways, just on the surface, but also if you know the backstory, where Jayeshvai is, Emmanuel actually didn't go there to film him, and then he says, yeah, I want to do a film on him, and Jayeshvai says, this is a guy who works at the Gandhi Ashram, uplifting the lives of lots of people, particularly in the slums around. And he says, he calls me up and he's like, you know, this guy's a friend of yours. Otherwise I would have just said, no, you know, I don't like to do this stuff. I like to be anonymous and I understand the stories need to be shared and it has its values, but that's really not my purpose and role. And I said, yeah, you know, Emmanuel, like you can just trust him. And I just knew Emmanuel from who he was. And Emmanuel goes out and does something that I think is reflective of his meditation practice. So he actually figured out a way to honor his, you know, preference of being an anonymous-ish server, of not being on tape, of not drawing attention to him, and yet telling the story, and yet, like, skillfully capturing it on film. So if you look at that whole film, and we'll send out the link after the call, Emmanuel never gets like a, you know, full face shot. It's like the camera is always behind him, and he's just following him through a, you know, in a walk through the slums, where you get such a flavor of the kind of person that he is and the kind of work that he does and the kind of values that he talks about, and yet it's so sensitive. It's just brilliant, you know. So Emmanuel, yeah, it does show up in your work in more ways than one, and I'm grateful for it. We'll go to the, sorry for hijacking the call, but I will go to the next caller.
Thank you so much for this conversation today. This is Michelle Ehlers calling in from Santa Fe. I have a very quick question and then a little bit longer one. The quick one is there a screening scheduled for Santa Fe, New Mexico, to your knowledge?
Not yet, but you could be a great host for one.
Okay, I would be very happy to coordinate with you and help in setting that up.
Yeah, there's so many easy ways to do that, so we'd love your engagement. We'd love to come to Santa Fe. And
yeah, and get you hooked up with this plan for a global water festival also.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm. And then the longer thing is, speaking to what you were talking about the, you know, working on the ground and getting numb. I've spent many years coaching people in transformational global leadership, what it takes to actually make a difference at the global level. And the three things that I have seen that makes the biggest difference in trying to maintain your capacity in the face of what you're talking about and overwhelm. One is meditation, absolutely. Two is finding a group of people that understand what you're doing and understand the commitment and staying in communication with them and let them bring you back when you're getting lost and remind you who you are and what you're doing. And I found that in coaching people that are doing that, that's the one thing that people tell me that I provide more than anything else is just somebody who remembers who they are and what they're doing when they get lost or numb or whatever it is. So just that, having someone to talk to. And if you ever want someone to talk to, I'd be more than happy to support you. I've been very excited about the Global One Less Project for a long time. So I'm offering my support in anything you do.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, the other thing is, the third thing is I have found that it's very important to stay in touch with individuals and their stories, and clearly you're doing that. The other thing that seems to be helpful is to chunk. In other words, to sometimes step back and look at the overall picture, whether it's a community, whether it's a continent, and in particular humanity, and start getting in touch with the entity humanity and the experience of humanity, because we can handle a chunk of one much better than we can handle a chunk of 7 billion. So flipping back from the experience of one person to the experience of the bigger I have found also to be very helpful. And then one more thing I wanted to add and ask you about was I'm actually more concerned about, rather than the numbness of people on the ground working, I'm actually more concerned about and would love to hear your thoughts about ignorance. And when I mean ignorance, I mean not only not knowing, and I'm very grateful for your work in bringing awareness and knowledge to people about what's happening in other parts of the earth. But there's that kind of ignorance, the lack of knowledge, but there's also the ignorance that is, I know it, but I ignore it.
Yeah.
And that one scares me.
That scares me, too. I mean, I don't think that's there's an easy answer to that. I think there's a deep-rooted, you know, issue why that's, you know, why we're suffering from that. I think that there, you know, that many people just feel that there's so little that they can do, and they feel cut off, and they feel cut off from so many things. And I think that the, you know, that's why at the same time there's a hunger to reconnect, whether it's through, you know, the tremendous work of Service Base or people who are, you know, interested in finding ways to connect to something that's deeper, because they feel so cut off. And so it's a tough one. It's a tough one. I think when the problems get so big, you know, apathy can set in.
Yeah.
It's tough. I've struggled with that myself.
No,
thank you. Thank you for what you're doing.
Well, thank you for your questions.
Thank you, Michelle. And there was a question that came in through the internet wires. You mentioned the struggle of people at so many instances. Can you highlight one that particularly comes to mind and how it weaves into the water struggle?
Let me share a story from the film, perhaps.
Sure.
In the film, and it's during the journey of the Rajendras on the Ganges, he's in near Terry Dam, which is one of the largest dams in India, and has created a lot of problems in India since it's been constructed, as many dams do. And Rajendra is a proponent of not damming the river, because when you dam a river, you stop the life of the river flowing, as he says. And he is meeting with these supporters of the dam, because often people who support dams, there's connections to industry, there's jobs, there's electricity, there's a lot of things that people feel passionate about, you know, improving their lives, and there's a lot of validity to what they're saying, but at the same time, there's a lot of negative impacts to the river. And he's meeting with these people, and it becomes a very physical altercation. The police have to come in, people are arrested. It's a very, you know, climactic moment in the film of his struggle and the struggles of all the characters as a whole, as you see the kind of resistance they're facing. And he breaks down in tears, because he's like, I'm not a politician. I'm just on a pilgrimage. I'm just trying to, I'm not saying what you're doing is bad. I'm meeting with you. And he was so affected by the violent response that he was getting. You know, I think that, to me, put together, really summed up his struggle and the struggle of our characters. And sometimes many people struggle who are trying to create change, is the resistance that they're getting. Sometimes it's very hard for them to deal with, and it isn't always rightly, it's not necessarily what they should be dealing with. He isn't a politician, he's just trying to do this, but he gets caught up in so many things. And I think a lot of people feel that. They're just trying to make a difference, or trying to, you know, contribute, and they end up getting caught up in all these other problems. And I think that's the problem at the moment, is that things aren't so easy and sort of cut and dry. So once you're committed to trying to create change and do something, you're in a world that you necessarily can't control. It can be very taxing and hard to deal with. And in the film, you know, he struggles. And then he overcomes and moves forward. But you know, he shows a side of himself, this really vulnerable side, this really human side, during the process.
That's great. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. We'll go to the next caller. And again, a reminder, if you have a question, we don't have too much time left, but if you have a question or a comment or a thought, you can hit *6 to get on the queue. And if you're on another platform, you can also email question@servicebase.org.
Hi, Emmanuel. My name is Shweta. I just wanted to thank you for sharing your experiences. I had a couple of questions. The first one was, what role did you see technology play when it came to all these three, I'll call them activists or central players in your movie? What role did technology play in the movement that they were trying to create? You know, whether it was in terms of social mobilization or community organizing or social media. And were you able to see that, and did you think it was important? And the second question I had was about, it looks like industry and corporations are part of your movie. And as a filmmaker, it's sort of a fine line because a lot of your funding may come from that sector. And here you are making a movie about how that sector is sort of like affecting, you know, a natural resource that we all have a right to. So what were your thoughts about that? And do you think that, you know, the way that these three activists went about, you know, bringing awareness to their issues, was that the right way to do it, to sort of like take on big business?
Thank right. I'll answer the second question first. You know, for us, the funding did not come through corporate sponsorship or funding sources that had connections to those organizations or companies. So we were free to do, you know, to say what we wanted. You know, there is definitely, you know, the role of big business in the film as a negative one in many ways, but there are no names really, you know, shouted out as they're doing this or doing that. It's more like there's an underlying feeling that the struggle these people are facing, or especially Regender and Ariel, is against, you know, the relationship between big business and government, which is very true in their stories. You know, I think that we were just trying to be truthful to their stories and share what was there and the struggles they're dealing with. Ariel, it's in your face because it's oil companies that you know, we know these oil companies, the Shell and Chevron and Exxon and Mobil. You know, they're names we know. In India, it was more about the relationship between, you know, corporate interests and government interests, and not named directly. In Jay's story, it really wasn't there. So, but we just tried to be truthful to the stories that we were following. And then as far as the first question, social media actually played a really powerful role in one of our stories, and that is of Ariel Deranger's story of bringing the awareness of the tar sands impact to her community and the tar sands issue as a whole to the world. And during the course of following her story, it went from a small issue as far as in people's awareness to something that was being discussed on a global stage. And a lot of that was a result of, you know, started following Ariel, it was really her and a handful of other people who were doing this work. And by the end of the film, you know, there is the largest civil protest in front of the White House since the 1960s, where many people were arrested for trying to stop the pipeline expansion, the Keystone XL pipeline, and the mobilization of those people, and how it then became a story that was discussed in every major media outlet in the country, was partly because of social media, of leveraging these resources to get the word out and to mobilize people. So that was really interesting to see. With Regender, it really wasn't so much of a player. For him, it's really on the ground, word of mouth, meeting people every day and making those connections on a human level. So it was really interesting to see that.
Yeah, that's great. Those were great questions. There is another one, Emmanuel, that came in from online by someone who goes by the name B2. What are some of the challenges of conserving water for households in the U.S. where the system is so centralized? Which I think is a question of just being practical and saying, how can we step up our relationship to water in a way, in a system where you feel so disconnected? Like most people, I know I live in Berkeley, you're not really going to see a river, or you're not going to see where the water is flowing. And so how do we step up our relationship to water and become more sensitive to some of these issues in the U.S.?
Well, I think that's a great question, very practical one. I think there's two things. One is that there's always a river nearby. You'd be surprised, even in Berkeley, or creek, and knowing where that river is, what its name, knowing your watershed, knowing where your water comes from, even if your water comes from an aqueduct, and that flows for hundreds of miles from a river far away, but knowing that is just a great thing, to know exactly where your water comes from. Just that awareness alone, I think, changes how you use the water. When every time you open the tap, you think, God, this is traveling hundreds of miles to get here, and it has to be pumped over hills to get here. I'm going to be more cautious about how I use it because the energy it takes to get here. Or I know this comes from my local watershed in my backyard. I'm gonna be more connected with it because the water comes from right around me. I think the awareness, like so much things in life, once you're aware of where things come from and the role it has in your life, then things start to change. And then there are so many really simple things you can do, whether you live in a house or an apartment, that can have a tremendous impact on water. If you live in a garden, and you got a lawn, maybe you don't have a lawn. Lawns take a lot of water. Be aware of how you're watering your garden, how much water goes into it. Just monitor it and see how it's being used. Don't take long showers. When you brush your teeth, turn the water off after you get your toothbrush wet. little simple things, like someone said at the very beginning, like they put the shower on, then they turn the water off, and they soap up, and they turn the shower on afterwards. Yeah. Things like that can save a lot of water. If you can look at some of the numbers, but if you leave the tap running while you're brushing your teeth, it's gallons of water.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anybody's done this, but fill up a gallon jug of water, then fill up a few of them and carry them around for a day. Like people said, you said in your story in the Puma, people had traveled a long way to get you water, and you realize how important water is and how potent it is as a tool for, when you've got to physically carry something like that and changing your behavior. So,
for sure. Well, thank you, Emmanuel, for all this, for all that you are. Paul kind of asked you this question, but I'm curious about it, so I'm going to sneak it in. I don't know if people know, but Emmanuel was actually a musician in his 20s, and I'm sure before then as well. And I think Oprah even, I don't know what the right word for it is, but syndicates one of his musical creations. He was a jazz player, and then he became a filmmaker. And we didn't get into this in this call, but Emmanuel, do you see yourself as being a filmmaker in the future, or too hard to tell, or you'll just wait for that dream again to kind of pop up and guide you?
I do see myself continuing to work within film, and I bring my musical background into the filmmaking process as well. In Elemental, I scored the music for the film, which is a wonderful experience to be able to do that and include that part of my creative process in the film. And I've done that in the films that I've made in the last year since we finished Elemental. I've also scored. So I'm trying to bring my musical background into my filmmaking. But I do see myself staying within film. I don't know what the subject matter of the films might be that I'm going to make, but I enjoy telling stories, and I want to keep doing that.
So it's beautiful. Before we do our closing minute of gratitude and silence, any ways in which we can be helpful? You kind of addressed that a little bit, but perhaps you want to recap that for us as well?
Yeah, I would just say that if anybody wants to help and get involved in our distribution of Elemental, we welcome it and would be so grateful for anything you'd be able to offer, even if it's just liking the film on Facebook and sharing it with your friends, or encouraging people to go to one of the theatrical screenings that they live nearby, or to host a screening and, start a conversation like this after the film, which is our hope, that the film can then be used to start conversation and create change in any way that it's, it can in the local communities that the film is screened. So, elementalthefilm.com, And if you want to reach out personally, please do. We'd be thrilled to have more people to help us get this movie out there. So thanks, guys, and it was a real pleasure being able to talk with you this morning.
Thank you, and the pleasure is really all ours. Thank you for not just Elemental and not just this call, but just all your work and your friendship and service, which means a lot to a lot of people in service space. So we really appreciate that. We'll just take a minute in silence, in the spirit of gratitude for all those things that brought us all together. Thank you. To all of you that held space, thank you to people in the social media world that are doing their thing to spread ripples. Thank you to Paul for moderating an excellent conversation, and thank you, Emmanuel. So just a minute of silence. Thank you. And as our final goodbye, what we will do is unmute everyone, and then on the count of three, maybe we could all, in a wonderfully chaotic way, just say, thank you, Emmanuel. So I'll do that count of three. It's always chaotic. Let's see, how do we do this? There you go. I think everyone is unmuted. So on the count of three, one, two, and three.
Thank you.
You're a water hero.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, guys. Thank you, Napoon. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Emmanuel.
To be part of your community this morning and in my life in general. It's nice to know we've got friends like this out there. So.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks. Continued inspiration, Emmanuel.
Well, thank you, Paul. Hope you guys have a wonderful Saturday and a great weekend.
All right. See you. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.